The Movies, Films, and Flicks podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/shark. Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Hello, welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I'm your host, John Lossworth. Joining me once again is my co-host Mark. I just want to say, Mark, you look really comfy over there with your beanie on. It just looks, you look like you're all set right now.
I'm hunkered down. I'm happy. It's cold here in Georgia right now.
Right.
I am wearing a ski cap inside, but it's
that cold.
No, I just like the way it looked this morning. I was going to leave and run some errands earlier, but then I just left it on.
Yeah.
So now via Skype, you can see it on my head.
No, I know you grew up in Florida, so it's got to be a huge adjustment.
Oh, yeah. It's tough, man. It's like 17 degrees here right now.
So what do you do? Like days where it's just too cold outside? Like, I don't think I've ever had to go through that living in Florida my entire life.
I've learned, man. I work in the film industry up here, man. So we have 14-hour days that are outside. Sometimes we work nights. Ooh. So when I first moved up here, it was a challenge. I wasn't ready for this cold weather. I know people in, you know, Chicago, Canada, yeah, wherever else are probably laughing right now. But when you're standing on a set for 14 hours, I remember the first time I worked an overnight shoot, it was the coldest night of, I think, 2011. And I had to run into a Burlington coat factory during our lunch and buy two jackets just to
You just ran in there. It's like, yo, give me two jackets now.
Yeah. And so I've learned how to layer. I've learned how.
Yeah, I have no idea what layering is.
But this ski cap's basically just for fashion. You know, I was fishing for compliments and it worked.
Nice. Yeah, you got my compliment. So congratulations. I don't know. I just, for some reason, I just picture you like on a really cold day, just staying inside, watching movies all day.
Yeah, you know, The Thing.
Yeah.
What's that Paul Walker movie with the sled dogs? 8 Below.
Yeah.
What's that ice skating movie? The Cutting Edge.
Blades of Glory.
Whiteout.
No, that was Will Ferrell. So sorry.
remember Whiteout with Kate Beckinsale?
No.
Like, the whole point of the movie was like during a whiteout you can't see anything. So large stretches of the film, there's absolutely nothing to see.
Right. Okay. Yeah. There's a reason why I forgot about that movie.
You know, I kind of love that movie.
Really?
I think it's terrible. Yeah. But I like that it was made.
All right. So aside from Whiteout, any seen any good movies lately?
Well, I wouldn't call this good or bad. I'd probably call it really bad. I watched a movie called Legendary with Dolph Lundgren and Scott Adkins, where they're being hunted by a giant frilled lizard that swims in the water. And
was this a sci-fi movie or is it like
yeah it was I don't think it went on the sci-fi channel. I think Dolph just does 70 movies a year around the world, just a bit do like various vacations on islands,
right?
And I'm serious, it's like this giant frilled lizard that chases him around, and then Dolph becomes jerky, and then they run around this cavern for a half hour, and it was really, really, really unnecessary. But I did watch I think it's a Finnish film, Norwegian film called Ragnarok.
Yeah.
Have you seen previews for that?
No.
It's like a Jurassic Park-y type film with a family where they go looking for this Viking treasure. They want to go find out that these Vikings were at this island, and then they go to this island, and then there's a jerky beast. So I've watched a couple aquatic sea creature movies in the last few days.
So like... Are sea creatures, like, it seems like in the past decade, sea creatures have kind of made a comeback as far as movie monster / villains, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, Jaws kind of started it. Then you had I'm sure there were others before that, but then you had Orca.
Well, you had Pirates of the Caribbean with the Kraken. Like,
oh, gosh.
I think that kind of jump-started the whole sea monster kind of trend, right?
Release the Kraken.
Release the Kraken.
You know, why would you want to release? Does he have control over? Did he have control over that Kraken?
No, I don't think he did. He just, you know, he was throwing like a firecracker, hoping that would do something.
Like you know that Return of the King movie where they have that undead army,
yeah,
and then they wipe out everyone in that battle. Spoilers. But it's like, if I had an undead army, I would be like, listen, guys, just help me out for like a week and then I'll release you. But if I had a Kraken, I would just use it all the time. I wouldn't like strategically bring it out.
Right.
I mean, I guess you got to feed it when it's out. I don't know. But if I had a Kraken on my side, I would be like, just do all the work for me and I'm going to have some margaritas.
Yeah.
I'm going to hang out with Dolph Lundgren over here. Hey, kill that frilled lizard while you're at it.
So it seems like Krakens, frilled lizards, and undead armies are kind of the flavor du jour as far as like movie monsters and villains go. Mark,
and the great thing about them is that there's just a never-ending barrage of bad creatures. Yeah. I love that. I love every year we get a new terrible movie monster.
Mark, you actually wrote two articles, right, about the top five best worst movie monsters. Well, you wrote two articles, top five best worst movie monsters and top five best worst movie villains.
Yeah, I kind of got tired of reading about the best monsters and the best villains. So I was like, no one's ever written a post about the best worst movie monsters. Now, people have written posts about the worst movie monsters that are just really soul crushing. But I wanted to write a post about ones that I enjoyed and movies that aren't so good.
So, all right, I'm looking at your article, the five best worst movie monsters. Like, well, let's just go through the list, actually, right now. We'll start with, should I start at five or should I start at one?
Start at one. It's in no particular order.
Oh, okay. I didn't know whether or not this was an ascending or descending order.
Man, the amount of thinking montages and punch dancing I would have had to have done to put these in order would have been a lot. You know, I would have wasted a lot of my life figuring out a very good order for these. So I just put them in no particular order.
I think that would have been very entertaining to watch, actually. Oh, and as always, these two articles are on the Movies, Films, and Flicks website. So if you're listening right now, pull up the website and you can follow along with us.
www.moviesfilmsandflicks, moviesfilmsandflicks.com. Movies, films, and flicks. You're not flicking the nose. It's like a flick. Flicks.
So Netflix. was F-L-I-C-K-S taken?
Well, I don't think you called it like Netflix. Like
Netflix.
I guess movies, you know, there's movies, there's great films, and then there are popcorn flicks.
Flicks. Yeah, makes sense.
And if they are bad, it does feel like a flick to the face.
All right. The five best worst movie monsters, according to our very own Mark Hoffmeyer. Number one, the sea monster, or sea monster from Waterworld.
All right, so Waterworld at the time was probably, I think it was the highest budgeted film ever made. It was just, if you haven't seen it, it's Kevin Costner. He has this amazing catamaran. He flies around on the ocean and he battles an overacting Dennis Hopper.
Yes.
Just the budgetary constraints of shooting on the ocean, it was just an insanely expensive film, which I kind of love. Like, it has a weird Jack Black cameo where he's a pilot in a plane. But there's one part in the film that really sort of captured my imagination. Do you remember that random sea creature where the two people were hungry and Costner gets annoyed? So he ties himself to a rope. He gets dragged behind this catamaran. Mm-hmm. And we're talking this. What feels like a 50-yard creature comes out of the water, eats him whole, and then he shoots a hole through the monster. And the next scene, they're eating fish steak.
I don't know.
But I'm just wondering, like, are monsters this close? Like, are they always around? Like, where did this monster come from? And,
Well, the thing is that I'm usually not always on the sea like that. So I really don't know. I feel like as far as, like, that goes, I have to take Costner's word for it. Like, that's what happens when you're on the sea.
I guess he knows better than we do, right?
I can't remember the last time I went on a cruise. I mean, I don't remember that happening. But then again, I mean, I was kind of inside most of the time. So I don't know what was going on outside.
I mean, like, And it feels very wasteful. Like, he's not going to eat that entire sea creature. Couldn't he have pulled in a grouper? He probably knows how to catch those things. Was he showing off?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it... Yeah, I don't know. I'm not too much of a seafood guy.
But I like that monster because there's no explanation. It was on the screen for zero amounts of time. And I don't know, it just it stuck with me. I kind of like the mystery of this easily killed but gigantic sea creature.
The thing is, the thing that gets me about this is that, like, his mouth opens horizontally and not vertically. It just trips me out. I know it's not the first monster to do that, but it's just, it just throws me off. I'm like, no, that's not how mouths work.
So all the while during Waterworld, you're like, why is that creature's mouth opening like that?
Well, I mean, it's not like the movie gave me too much else to think about.
Yeah, you're right. Okay. Yeah, I like him. I think he might have been an interesting fellow, and he was just at the wrong place at the wrong time. You know, he might have been going to work, and he got caught. That's a Mitch Hedberg joke.
Yeah.
So I think Costner might have killed an endangered species as well.
All right, I'm looking at the image of the fish steak, and honestly, it doesn't look too bad. It looks he could clean it up a little bit, but I would eat it. It doesn't.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. All right. So, okay. The next one is the Moon Rock Spiders from Apollo 18. I never saw Apollo 18, so you're going to have to describe these Moon Rock Spiders to me.
All right. So, I watched Apollo 18 with our fellow co-host who's not here right now, John Levengood, and my wife, Megan. And it was the second of a doubleheader, and we had a few drinks in us, and we absolutely loved this film. I mean, it is bonkers. It makes no sense. Like, there's no way for the footage to be recovered because the spaceship blows up at the end. So I'm thinking the stuff would freeze. But the main creatures in this film are these jerky moon rock spiders. Are they evil? I think they take some rocks onto their ship and then the rocks get kind of jerky about it. So are they mad that the rocks were stolen? Are they toxic? They're kind of jerkies. They kill the communications. They slash a hole in the insulation. Yeah. They harass the people.
I don't know. I mean, maybe they're just defending their neighborhood. I mean, honestly, they were just like chilling, and all of a sudden you have like these guys just show up out of nowhere in their weird looking little vehicle. It's like, yo, dude, you just ruined my lawn.
And they're like, hey, where's Frank, Hank, and Bill?
Yeah, exactly.
But it doesn't make sense, though, because one of the little things gets into this guy's ribs and he starts turning evil.
Oh, really?
Which doesn't really make sense.
Oh, man. Should they call it Orkin Man?
And once again, with Waterworld, like, Apollo 18 just – it raises so many questions and – you know, there's a moment during the film where my wife Megan was like, give me back those rocks. Like, and she said it just adorably. And so that's kind of become like a funny thing between us. And you never know what these rocks are. And they are just jerks and they surround the thing. There's a scene where you think they escape from, like, you think the guy's dead, but he just runs past them. So they're obviously not that fast moving.
Right.
I
don't know.
I like how little thought was put into them, and that's why I kind of like it. I like the mystery. I don't like when things are over-explained.
Right. So I'm guessing they did not explain why there were spiders living on the moon.
No explanation for moon. That's the prequel.
Well, I don't think you can explain that, but right. Well, that sounds amazing. The next one on this creepy list of top five best worst movie monsters, The Creature of Darkness from Creature of Darkness.
So part of our website is Bad Movie Tuesday. I wrote a column for years called Bad Movie Tuesday, and this stemmed from when I was at Florida State. My wife and I would go to my friend's house. There's three of them there, and we would watch bad movies on Tuesday. And somehow we picked up this film. I think it was on Redbox, and there's this picture of an alien hand grabbing the globe. And I'm like, This looks terrible. So we rented it. And the movie has Devon Sawa. You remember him from Casper?
Yeah, and Idle Hands.
Yeah, Idle Hands. It has one of the ladies from Blue Crush that wasn't Kate Bosworth or Michelle Rodriguez. And this movie is basically about these ATV riding teens who run into this burlap sack wearing jerk who throws his spinal cord and he doesn't mind being naked. And whenever the creature walks, there's always bog fog. So during this movie, whenever we saw bog fog, we would yell bog fog and take a drink. And did he control the bog fog? Did the because it went with him. Was he emitting something that was gross? Why was whose spinal cord was he throwing? I mean, just it was just so bad. And then it switched over to this terrible CGI. And you basically just felt terrible for everyone involved in the film. But the creature and his bog fog have really just stuck in my mind. And I think the dude's pure gold.
Yeah, I'm looking at the picture of the I'm assuming this is the Creature of Darkness. And honestly, it looks like something you would see like in one of those, like those Goosebumps TV movies from back in the day, like back in the 90s. That's what that creature reminds me of. Like, it's not scary. It's just kind of scary enough to scare you if you're like you're 6 years old.
it's a rubber suit, and yeah. I think they got it from one of those movies from back in the 80s.
Yeah.
And another thing about him is he moves so slow. He inches along. He just moves incredibly slow. But they run into every rock, trip on every tree, hit every branch, fall in every mud pit.
Well, that's why he's moving so slow. He knows he doesn't need to sweat.
I wouldn't look behind me if a creature was chasing me. Would you? Like, I think I would just run. Because the second you turn your head, you're going to get impaled by a stick or trip on a rock or fall into quicksand.
Yeah, but you say that. But when you're actually in that situation, you're turning back like every 5 seconds. It's like, oh man, am I away? Like, no. Oh, I just got impaled. Damn it.
That's why I never enter the woods. I just stay in open fields and prairies.
Okay. Yeah, I can't think of anything that bad that would happen in the middle of a empty field.
Maybe a tremor.
Yeah. Well, okay.
But those are good. Those are good movie monsters. So they don't exist in our world.
So, all right. The monsters from this next movie, I'm assuming this is a movie that that didn't see like a worldwide release in theaters. The Sharks from Sharks in Venice. You'll have to inform me about this movie. What was Sharks in Venice about?
So Sharks in Venice is about Stephen Baldwin battling the sharks who killed his dad while he was looking for treasure in Venice. In this movie, Baldwin rarely stands up. He sits down constantly. He uses a jogging double. There's a person who jogs for him in this film, and it's obviously a jogging double. There's a scene in the film where he says this line. He's on the phone with his girlfriend. He goes, "I can't talk. I'm bleeding." The sharks get bigger and smaller depending on the scene. Poor innocent Venetians get wiped out who have nothing to do with the plot. I mean, it is bad movie gold. It's like told seriously, written amateurishly. And there's this scene. He's this professor and he's teaching his class and he gets a call and he just leaves and goes, "Just read chapter 6. And he just walks out. But I mean, how long is chapter 6? Like, how long is the class? Like, he's not going to come back.
Well, I honestly have had professors like that, so it's not, to be fair. But
what I love, though, there's this scene, right, where they have him tied up and he's unconscious. And they throw this whatever sack, they throw him, but it's probably just a sack into a boat. And there's just the funniest thud that I've ever heard in my life. Like, they throw him into a boat. And there's a scene where he's improvising, Stephen Baldwin, and he's hiding from the criminals, so he's pretending to be a tourist with his girlfriend. And I kid you not, he's looking at these things going, "Look at those thingies. Oh, check those thingies out. Oh, look at those thingies up there." And he does this little hand motion where the wrist is kind of flapping around. He's like, "Check out those thingies." And the sharks attack him. They get bigger, smaller. There's this really random scene where there's this drunk guy and he's harassing this woman and the shark wipes him out. The movie makes no sense and it is glorious.
Nice. Now, the fact that you had Stephen Baldwin in there is step one.
I can't talk. I'm bleeding.
I'm bleeding. Bleeding from the thingy.
And the neck sharks are the best of the bunch. I think I would have put these guys at number one.
Right. The shark from Jaws, The Revenge.
Now, so this is probably what, the great grandson or granddaughter of Jaws, and it still has a vendetta against the poor family.
Yeah.
It tracks down Brody's kids. It hunts his wife. It roars at the end, and it spears itself on its own. And like Roger Ebert has this great quote about it, where he's like, "I believe that the shark wants revenge against Mrs. Brody. I do. I really do believe it. After all, her husband was one of the men who hunted this shark and killed it, blowing it to bits. And what shark wouldn't want revenge against the survivors of the men who killed it?"
That's true.
And like the woman, she gets flashbacks from scenes she wasn't even part of. And like Michael Caine won an Oscar during the filming of this, so he couldn't go. And he was like, "Ah, whatever. It built me my beach house."
Yeah.
But I just love that this shark wants revenge. It just, it is an angry, angry shark who roars and spears itself.
The only thing I remember about this movie is that it was kind of the first sequel I saw. I saw this when I was young. It was the first sequel that I saw that made me realize, like, hey, maybe sequels aren't that great of an idea always. You know, when you're a kid, it's like, oh, a sequel, more of stuff I like, that's great. But then when you watch Jaws: Revenge, I'm just like, actually, you know what? That might be too much of a... That just might be too much. Like, this is really like the first sequel I've ever soured on in my life.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And it's just... I'm not saying I mean, it's a bad movie. I enjoyed it. But at the same time, it's like, well, maybe not everything can be like Empire Strikes Back.
I mean, a shark was blown to bits.
Right.
And then it hunts down this guy's widow.
Yeah. I mean, I guess on paper, that's, that sounds good.
Like, did anybody think about that when they were making it? Like, who? No one's going to notice that, whatever.
I don't think there was too much thinking going on when they made the decision to go with that movie. All right.
Yeah, I do think it's probably one of my favorite monsters.
Hey guys, John here from Movies, Films, and Flicks, here to tell you about a special offer from Audible. Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. With over 150,000 titles to choose from, it can be a little daunting to figure out which book to listen to. So might I suggest The Hobbit by J.R.R. Tolkien? You might have heard this book recently. There might be a movie about it, but why would you want to watch a movie when you can listen to the book? It's the same thing. It's just not as flashy or as bright or doesn't require a trip to the movie theater. Anyway, to download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/shark. Again, that's audibletrial.com/shark for your free audiobook. Speaking of sharks, that's actually a good segue to the second article, the top five best worst horror villains. And like your first entry is actually another shark. The shark who ate Sam Jackson in Deep Blue Sea. You said, you know, I'm guessing the shark's name is Steve.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And, you know, what I love about Steve is he's a genetically engineered shark that got loose via, I think he, Stellan Skarsgård gets his arm bit off by Steve. And then Steve catches, they put Stellan Skarsgård on a stretcher and a helicopter is going to airlift him out. But Steve catches it out of the air. And then he takes the gurney, runs it into a 6-foot deep glass window, causes a flood. Then he tricks the humans into flooding their place so that it'll sink so he can eat the humans. And then he waits for Steven or Sam Jackson to unleash a monologue before he kills him.
Yeah, that impassioned monologue Sam Jackson gives is epic. Like, it's just everybody's paying attention to him. Like, they're just ready to go to battle for him. And all of a sudden, he just gets eaten by the shark.
We are not gonna die.
No, you died.
are not going to die. We are going to survive. And you know what I love about this shark is Renny Harlin, the director of Deep Blue Sea, he knew that Jaws was 25 feet, so he made this shark 26 feet.
As you do.
And Renny Harlin had prior to this, he directed Sam Jackson in The Long Kiss Goodnight. And people were like, you cannot kill Sam Jackson. You cannot kill him. So he's like, I'm going to kill Sam Jackson in a movie. And Sam Jackson was down, and they killed him via large 26-foot shark named Steve.
Nice. I don't know. I would love to get killed by a shark on screen. I feel like that'd be a lot of fun to do.
Oh, it'd be the best. Like, just get swallowed whole. That's what I want. Like, I don't even want the shark chewing on me. I just want to, like, you know what? I want to dive off of. All right, so here's a good horror film. Sharks in Pool.
Sharks in Pool.
Yeah, so I'm on the high dive.
Yeah.
And you know, I jump off and I just land right in a shark's mouth.
Oh no. Or like as you're like in midair, the camera cuts to your face and we see like midair your realization that you're about to dive into a shark's mouth. Like, oh no.
Now do I still try to nail my dive? Like
I think like no, you're nailing your dive from the beginning, and then like you go like your facial expression goes from stern and serious to like look of desperation and horror.
Chomp. But that's what I love about Deep Blue Sea is so many movies are predictable, and this film was insane. You have LL Cool J fighting a shark in a kitchen. You have this model. It keeps me on my toes. And we worked in the same theater back in the day, John, in St. Pete, Goldberg. And Deep Blue Sea was the number one crowd participation movie I've ever heard in my lifetime. Yeah. People went insane for Deep Blue Sea. It united audiences.
Yeah.
And like at the end, everyone it was funny though, because everyone was yelling. They're like, go LL, go LL. But no one knew Thomas Jane's name. So everyone's like, go white boy, go white boy. And I mean, everyone was just cheering. It was just the best. I loved it.
It's movies like that that keep the movie theater industry alive.
Absolutely.
So if you're listening, theater owners, you need to support movies like Deep Blue Sea more often. So get Shark in Venice in your theater screens right now.
And sales in 2015 will be up by 47%.
Exactly. Nothing to worry about anymore. Mm-hmm. All right, the next entry on this list is another terrifying thing, I guess. Gerard Butler's hair in Dracula 2000.
So I was watching this film, and Gerard Butler plays Dracula, and all I could notice was just this massive curly mop he had on his head. Like, it looks like, gosh, are you looking at this picture? It looks like someone just put a hair helmet on his head.
I'm looking at his audition video, and he's got like the hair, but he's also got like the crazy eyes going on too. It's okay. Very weird.
So for you guys at home, go to YouTube and type in Gerard Butler Dracula audition, and he has this long wig on his head, and he is overacting and just completely selling it. It is it got him the role, so it worked. But it is just the most depressing audition you will ever watch in your life, and then just. His hair is just, it's just so bad.
It's, yeah, it's honestly, it's epically bad. That's how bad it is. Like, it's so bad. Like, I can't help but just respect it. I'm like, you know, you got to do your own thing there. I just.
But you know what? I was researching this film, and I found out that a lot of women really like it. And I found some quotes on Amazon where people wrote, if you're a Butlerian crush girl, by all means, rent or buy this. The moments with Mr. Butler are worth the price. When he sniffs Mary, it's the kind of fully dressed erotic moment that puts all the nude scenes in cinema to shame.
Wow. Yeah, it's another movie I haven't seen yet.
And someone wrote, I would have only have rated it 2 stars for mediocre, but Gerard's mesmerizing, seductive performance saves this film. For that reason alone, I have given it 5 stars.
That's solid reasoning. I guess I can't go against that.
And so his hair is just, it's like, it's a hair helmet. And so it's very hard to be intimidated by this Dracula. Like Gary Oldman in Bram Stoker was terrifying. And Nosferatu, and I wouldn't say Brad Pitt in Interview with the Vampire. But the guys from 30 Days of Night, they were, well, no, they were kind of like Euro trash.
Like kind of ravers.
Vampires.
Yeah.
Like they had really clean clothes on when they went to Alaska. Like who dresses them? Did they pick out their outfits?
Yeah, they probably got a nice wardrobe. I mean, vampires always dress stylish. I don't know how or why. Maybe it's just part of the thing to do when you're a vampire. You just have to be stylish.
But, like, everybody on that boat was killed. So did they change clothes after they killed everyone? Because they must have gotten blood on them.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to – I mean, that would just be bad manners to just, like, walk around with blood all over your clothes.
And another thing about that boat, they killed everybody, all the humans, except for one person. So did they steer the boat? Did they take the boat to Alaska?
They put it on autopilot. I don't know. We're trying to put logic to Dracula 2000 here.
But hey, you're gonna. The next one is my favorite of all time. Yeah, my favorite vampire of all time.
Yeah, it's another vampire. It was Parker Posey's vampire in Blade Trinity.
Now, in this film, man, Blade Trinity is bonkers. And if you get a chance, read what Patton Oswalt has to say about the making of it. But it is just I love it. I think it's a beautiful, guilty pleasure cult classic. And Parker Posey is my favorite part of this film. She has this crazy pompadour haircut. She has a subplot about how she used to use Ryan Reynolds as her boy toy. And one of my favorite lines of cinema is Ryan Reynolds calls her a cock juggling thunder cunt in the film.
So charming, that Ryan Reynolds.
And she talks about lake trout in it. She does a lot of slow motion walking. There's this random scene where she kicks one of her assistants in the face when she's annoyed. And like she went full vamp. She went like full on awesome. And actually John and I did a tournament, the best worst sequel tournament, and Blade Trinity won it. I think we had 32 entries, and Blade Trinity won the whole tournament
by a country mile, right?
Yeah, by a country mile. Have you seen Blade Trinity?
I've seen half of it. It's one of those movies where I'll watch it, then I'll pause it to do something else, and then like I'll try to remember to come back to it. So I've done that. I've attempted to watch it like 5 times, so I've made it like halfway through. But I'll finish it one of these days.
Yeah, please. I just love that she's a yuppie vampire who awakens a male model Dracula.
Yeah. Oh, well, the next entry on our list is actually not a vampire. It's actually another shark. The mega shark. What is it with you and sharks and vampires?
Dude, Jaws is my favorite film, guys.
What if there was a movie
Jaws
where you had vampire sharks? Mark, you would be all over that.
Oh, my gosh.
It would be Christmas for you.
Yeah. They should make a Finnish film about that.
Yeah. You get bit by a shark and you become a shark. Well, all right.
Bit by a shark. Yeah. Interview with the megalodon.
Yeah. Well, the mega shark. Tell me about the mega shark.
All right, so remember Mega Shark versus Giant Octopus? It became this probably one. We were kind of just getting in the process of viral hits. And it was this terrible film that was viewed, I think, in the top 5 of Yahoo trailers in, I don't know, 2010. And it is a totally serious, really bad film about a mega shark battling a giant octopus. Right. But the best scene in this film is when the mega shark catches a plane out of the air.
Oh, yeah. That was actually the highlight of the trailer.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And what I love, there was an infographic about the trajectory the shark would have had to have taken to catch the airplane. And they broke down the science of it because the shark would have had to have seen it.
Yes.
Swam underwater, probably a couple hundred yards, then time its jump perfectly to take the plane out of the air.
There's the infographic is actually on the Movies, Films, and Flicks website if you guys want to take a look at that. But I can just imagine like somebody sitting at home, like just doing the math, on this, yeah, like, and they're pausing, yeah, the movie, they're rewinding it forward. It's like, wait, no, let me just adjust these numbers. It's like, that's amazing.
And it says here, a need for speed. To attack an aircraft 2,000 meters above sea level, Mega Shark needs to gather a launch speed of 709 kilometers an hour. And then they wrote, compare that to other fast stuff, like a bullet train only goes 443 kilometers an hour. A Tomahawk missile goes 800 kilometers an hour. And so this shark would have had to have gone a little bit less fast than a Tomahawk missile to catch that airplane out of the air.
Wow. Is that like the next step in warfare? Instead of like missiles, we just like shoot sharks at people.
That would be the worst thing ever. Like, I mean, oh gosh.
It just,
you think you're safe,
and then all of a sudden a shark just like just blows through your wall. And like it kills everybody.
And it has like a kelp water thing around, so it can you know, still absorb some water while I don't know how that would work, but if we're shooting sharks, it can breathe somehow.
It busts through the wall, it's flopping around, then it just manages to like grab like one or two people in its mouth and chomp on them.
Oh, that would be the worst.
Oh, I can't think of a more entertaining way to die.
But imagine if I went down that way, John. Like, I think everyone would kind of laugh about it. Like, local man killed by shark missile.
I would have a chuckle. Well, probably more than a chuckle. I'd probably have a hearty belly laugh about it. Like, oh, he's gone. But he got killed by a shark.
And if that happens to me, John, I'll let you have a third of my movie collection.
A third of your movie collection is actually pretty sizable. It's, yeah, it's actually no joke.
Yeah.
Right. All right.
You can.
I'm actually going to look forward to that. I don't even know.
Start planning something, John.
I'm going to start clearing out space. The last entry is actually neither a shark or a vampire. It is, well, it is John Voight in Anaconda. Mark, explain.
John Voight holds the distinction of having the oddest accent in screen history.
What accent is that? Like, I'm not really sure what it is.
It was like a weird, well, I think in the film, I was listening to How Did This Get Made, that podcast, and I think he's somewhere in South America. So he's a South American man that is blending a South American accent from one of the places. I don't know. And then he blends that with a Cajun accent. And then there's a little bit of New Jersey.
Hold on, wait. Let me pull up a clip here, and we can listen to it for like a couple of seconds.
Okay.
Let's see.
Aren't you gonna, John, pray?
Yeah.
Never look in the eyes of those you kill. They will haunt you forever. I know.
That's so weird. I just.
So, you know what I think the good word for it is? It's Rusky Creole. It's like Russian.
Yeah.
A bad English Russian accent mixed with Cajun.
Yeah. It's. I don't know. It just throws me off. I don't really know what it is, but I like it. I don't know why. I feel like I listen to that guy. I just want to have a drink with him. I feel like he'd be even more like, he would be even more crazy once we got him inebriated. It's just like his voice would even go more off the rails.
He would try to use you as bait for one of those anacondas. He's like this murderous river vermin who like winks after being regurgitated by an anaconda. And I think the acting choice is like either really shrewd or pompous, but it's just so memorable, and it's all in. Like, there's this scene where Ice Cube's like, snakes don't kill people, and then Voight's like, they don't. But he went like full French in that one. So I can't peg his performance. And like in this movie, it has a good cast. Like, J-Lo's in it, Owen Wilson, yeah, Eric Stoltz. It's not a bad cast by any means.
It was a box office success, if I remember.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I went and watched it. I thought it was good. And then remember, Anaconda's The Hunt for the Blood Orchid came out after that. And then there was another Anaconda movie with David Hasselhoff. So there's an audience for it.
Right. Wow. When is David Hasselhoff going to be in the? When is he going to get like a starring role as a monster? I feel like Hasselhoff would make a great monster, wouldn't he? No, as a, Hasselhoff as a vampire. How epic would that be?
Oh my gosh, a German vampire.
He would be. He could play Dracula. He could pull off the. He could pull off the hair that Gerard Butler couldn't.
I want to suck your blood and eat a cheeseburger.
Oh, wow.
What, you saw that clip?
Yeah, it was kind of sad, actually. But it was also kind of hilarious. I don't know.
And then I have some, I have a couple honorable mentions.
Right.
We got the air from The Happening.
Oh, yeah. Scary.
Real jerks.
Yeah.
And then I have the guy who yells the equivalent of Arg Oof Lombata in Ghost of Mars.
Oh.
He's just that terrible bad guy, but he just goes,
Lombata.
And then the swim fan in Swim Fan.
Yeah, she's pretty intense. I wouldn't want to mess with
her. Yeah. And so those are my, those are the monsters that we have.
All right. I think that was a pretty good rundown of the top five best, worst movie monsters and villains. Now, as previously mentioned, you can check out these articles and more on moviesfilmsandflicks.com. Mark, any final thoughts, plugs, anything you want to add before we wrap up this podcast?
If you haven't seen it, since we're talking about bad characters, we went and watched this, John. The Street Fighter, The Legend of Chun-Li.
Yes, yes.
Chun-Li. Chris Klein plays a character in that film called Nash.
Right.
And it is, you got to go on YouTube and just watch Nash clips, because it is the most all-in weird performance. Like, he's scoping out this woman's motorcycle and he kicks the tire. He says that Bison walks between raindrops and he has the weirdest accent, and it's hilarious. It is. I love it.
I just remember, like, he was on a stakeout with his female partner, and, like, in the middle of stakeout, he was like, he said something along the lines, "Hey, you want to make out?" or something like
yeah.
that.
And I felt so bad for Moon Bloodgood in that film, because she had to put up with Chris Klein in that movie. Like, you know, every day showing up to work, she was like, ugh.
Oh, great.
But he went for it, and he really, like, he went for it. And it's a very memorable.
It was honestly, Chris Klein was the only good thing about that movie, which tells Absolutely. You how bad that movie was.
Yeah. And he was terrible, but it was great. Like, he sort of transcended the role by being bad.
Yeah, I think you and me, like, we already had, like, a couple Coors Lights in us before we saw that movie. So we were in the appropriate mindset, I think, to watch that movie.
Did we stay all the way through?
I think you wanted to leave. I'm just like, no, let's just tough it out.
wasn't Michael Clark Duncan in it?
Yeah, yeah.
And then didn't I remember he punched somebody, and it had the worst punch sound effect ever. It was like,
well, I mean, coming from the lengthy cinema legacy of Street Fighter, it kind of lives up to that, right?
Oh gosh.
Yeah, this one and the Jean-Claude Van Damme Street Fighter, which is I like that movie. It's not a great movie, but I'll watch it any day.
It's a guilty pleasure, man.
Right. Well, I'm going to, you know what? That's a good idea. I think I'm going to go find my Street Fighter DVD with Jean-Claude Van Damme. And in the meantime, I guess we'll sign off on this podcast. Thank you once again for listening, guys. I've been your host, John Lasseloff. Thanks again to my co-host, Mark Hoffmeyer. And as always, check out moviesfilmsandflicks.com. for the articles we talked about today and more. And we'll see you guys next time.
Bye.
Seconds till shark drop. 5, 4, 3. two, one. Drop the shark. Go, go, go.
This podcast is a Shark Dropper Studios production.